for some reason it encapsulates this feeling of like a dread behind the attempt to like force happiness.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers. The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about three songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general. This episode's guest is Jana Hunter, the lead singer and primary songwriter of Baltimore-based band Lower Dens. Lower Dens are an indie pop band formed in 2010 by Hunter. Over the course of three albums, the band has shifted from scrappy guitar music to a lush synth-colored sound, to significant acclaim. Hunter, 39, is a native of Houston, Texas. The first song that Jana considers a formative moment is an unlikely choice. So unlikely, in fact, that it took Jana, Lee, me, and an acoustic guitar to identify it. Here's Frank Mills' 1979 top 40 hit, Music Box Dancer.
Yeah, Music Box Dancer is something that I really can't place, like, the time that I heard it when I was a kid, but it's something that I associate with my childhood. It could have been played in ice cream trucks. That might have been it. It also came on the radio during that time. For some reason, it encapsulates this feeling of, like, a dread behind the attempt to like force happiness in music like that, which very much for me was associated with like personal family stuff, but then over time has like retained that feeling in a more general way, and made me kind of attuned to that capability in music of having different layers of meaning, and specifically of the possibility of presenting people with dark elements hidden in happy sounding music, and how powerful that tension is, which is something that it comes up in the music that I write, and I still I barely ever think of that song, but when I or hear it, but whenever I do think of it, I still get kind of creeped out by it. And I do think it's universal, especially like the older that we are. Like I think you go back further in generations, and there was more and more of a tendency to not talk about things, and somehow music like this, for me, is representative of that desire to like ignore the problems and put a sheen on everything. And act in the way that you want to be interpreted by your neighbors, to the detriment of your health and your sanity.
That's Jana Hunter of Baltimore indie pop band Lower Dens talking about the song Music Box Dancer by Frank Mills. The second song Jana chose as being formative for them is Asleep by the Smiths.
sleep. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. Sing me to sleep.
I have several older siblings. One of them's 8 years older than me. He was in high school he was in high school when I was in like elementary school, and I was very annoying to him, you know. I idolized him, and he didn't want me anywhere near him. And he listened to the best music of all my older siblings, whom I hope will never hear that and make me argue with him about it. But he listened to New Order and Joy Division, and the thing that I really loved the most was Smiths. And anytime he played it, since he wouldn't let me come into his room, I would sit outside his room and listen to it. And this song, Asleep, was even then just like the saddest thing I'd ever heard. Yeah, but at the same time, really calming. And I was a sad kid, and I wanted to listen to that song over and over again. And yeah, in just a very personal way, that song has stuck with me for a long time. You know, because we live in a world that's not easy to live in sometimes, and sometimes you need a song that reminds you that other people feel that way too.
You know, I think there are lots of cases where someone writes a song and they have an intended meaning that they want to convey. You know, they want to evoke a certain emotional state or a type of experience that a lot of people have. I think a lot of times people write songs and then they go out in the world, and sometimes people have a very strong association, but it's not one you could have predicted or one you could have planned, you know, when you wrote it. Do you have experiences with Lower Dens where someone comes up to you and they really connect with a song you've written, and maybe they have done that in a way that has nothing to do with what you had in mind when you wrote it?
I feel like that has happened. I can't recall any specific instances of it. What it does make me think of is talking to Devendra Banhart about a song that he wrote. It's on his I was just listening to one of his old records the other day, and he has a song called Nice People, and when I heard it, I thought he was, you know, he was saying these, you know, he's singing like they certainly are nice people. The way he's singing, it makes you think he really doesn't like them. And when I finally got to talk to him about it, he was like, no, I really meant to say they were nice people. I don't know why everybody thinks that. But it's so, to me, it's so obvious. It's so creepy. But anyway, in my own experience, yeah, I mean, that probably has happened. I mean, I think that's a really important thing about music, is that it, you know, be allowed to be interpreted by the listener. And I don't think, as an artist, you should try so hard to enforce a certain meaning on other people.
The third and final song Jana chose as being important to them is Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
So I started playing the violin when I was a kid in school, and was really competitive, so I would practice all the time so that I could be the best in the class. And I genuinely think that's like what it was about for me at first. I enjoyed music, but I just wanted to be the best at something. Until we got to, in 7th or 8th grade, we got to Baroque music, and we started playing Vivaldi and Bach. And what I remember specifically was getting to play these Vivaldi violin concertos. And the one I remember best is this like first movement of the concerto in A minor. It was the one that made me realize that I that I really loved what you were able to do, what people were able to do just with like, composition of music. How somehow it could translate the, you know, the complexity of being alive in a way that like I didn't feel like was possible between me and other people, you know, but I could relate to this, and it's when I started to feel like some sort of relation to classical composers and to other people who were feeling or seeing the world in more layers than I felt like most of my classmates or, you know, family or friends were. And you know, and I guess it's possible, like, now I find myself more and more drawn into sound and drawn into composition and production, much more so than songwriting. And I think that could have been the genesis of that, because he does, and of course Bach does, so much with so little, one instrument, and they convey like a universe compared to what we're able to do with all our computers and synthesizers and everything, you know. Yeah.
Did you keep up with the violin?
I did until my senior year of high school. And then I didn't go to college and couldn't afford private lessons. So I still have it, and I pull it out and record with it sometimes, but I don't practice anymore.
Do you think that was something that you would have pursued if you had the opportunity?
Yeah, I really wanted to. Really wanted to. But I... you know, and in a really kind of a silly way, sometimes I still feel like this little bit of, like, loss at not having pursued it. But if I had, my life would have been very narrow, you know. That's a very narrow life to live, and I have every respect for the people who choose to do that. But I'm glad that I got to live a much more broad, varied, eccentric kind of life.
Do you feel like, you know, talking about focusing on composition? Do you think that the music that you make now is getting toward that area that you're talking about, where you can do so much with so little, where you can connect with this bigger world with something you create, you know, in your bedroom, in your brain?
Yeah, I mean, I in a sense, especially with Lower Dens, have always been trying to find ways to do that for myself, like varying degrees of success in very different ways. And I remember when I was a solo artist, when people would ask what my influences were, and I'd say, well, actually, I played classical music as a kid, and I still, that's a very strong influence for me. And they would say, well, I don't see that. I mean, you use guitars. And, well, that's true. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know how to explain how the ideas in classical music can be a driving force behind any other kind of music, and vice versa. You know, like, music is not confined for composers and musicians. Music is not confined to genres. We have preferences, and we have techniques and areas of practice and expertise, but it's not like that, you know.
Well, you know, I think that pretty much any time it applies, you can count on profile writers to say classically trained so-and-so, although I don't know if I've seen that associated with you that much, but it's always in there as if that sort of somehow puts people at a different level.
Yeah, and like that. I don't know if you need this podcast to be clean or whatever. Okay. It's It reminds me of a friend of mine keeps a list of names that are difficult to pronounce if you didn't get a very good education, and he does this to point out the fact that this is a way that upper class people quote unquote look down on lower class people. They enjoy correcting you when you say the name wrong, and I hate the idea of classical music being used that way, and I hate the very much like present class condescension that exists in the classical music world. For me, it has nothing. That has nothing to do with my attraction to classical music, the notion that it elevates you in some status way.
Well, it elevates you, or it can, but just because you have access to it doesn't elevate you as a person.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it elevates you in that it makes your life richer if you take it in, but anybody can do that.
This has been Essential Tremors. Essential Tremors is produced by Matt Byers and Lee Gardner, with oversight and special assistance from Aaron Henkin. Essential Tremors is distributed by WYPR, Baltimore's NPR affiliate, which you can find on the web at wypr.org. Connect with us at essentialpodcast.com, as well as all standard social media outlets. Thanks for listening.